So nice to have you back, Leith.
Great to be with you, Nima.
Yeah. Let's get started with Seth Hassan Nasrallah's speech. What did we learn from that?
Well, I think it was one of the calmest speeches that I've heard Seyyid Hassan Nasrallah give since the beginning of this war. So you could feel that how serious it was for him to, not be loud and so on. And in the beginning, of course, he spoke about the martyrs and their families, and he spoke about the response of the Lebanese society, the medical teams, the various parts of the country that all came together to make sure that the those who were injured are safe. And he then analyzed the actions of the Zionists, and he spoke about how if this intention was to blow up 3,000 pagers the first day, and 1,000 or whatever have you walkie-talkies the next day, then the target was the killing of 5,000 people. That was the intention of the Zionists. They wanted to do a mass genocide, and that's what he called it. He called it ethnic cleansing and genocide campaign. And you have the whole West and the Western media, you know, praising this action as if it is not genocidal. So once we understand that this was the intention of the Zionists, and we look at how what he said is the hand of God, the protection of God, that only got in the way of achieving that goal of genocide of 3,000, 5,000 people, and the fact that only 20-somewhat people on the second day were martyred, and 12 people on the first day were martyred. Those are clearly numbers that are very small in comparison to the intent that the Zionists had. So it was a failed operation. He spoke about how, you know, the Zionists expected that the highest cadres within Hezbollah would have these brand new pagers, and he said, no, actually the highest cadres in Hezbollah have the oldest models possible. And you could hear from that answer or statement that they understand that the older products that have very little software in them are the safest kind of electronics that you can have around you. This is why the nuclear weapons of the United States, their delivery system, the computers there run on Windows NT. This is like ancient. Why? Because the code is very simple and it's very safe. It's impossible and harder to, the simpler the code is, the harder it is to jam it and hack it. Anyways, to look at what he said in his speech, he detailed more, of course, why, you know, the Israelis were doing this. The fact that the Lebanese resistance was actually, when this act of terror happened, went on its highest mobilization and readiness, meaning silence, and every unit is ready to fire immediately. And they expected that the Israelis would use this attack to conduct an invasion of the country or an attack on the country. And clearly the Israelis didn't do that. That means that they, we go back to the intent of this attack. The intent of this attack was not to take out Hezbollah, but to cause a mass genocide of the people. He said there's going to be a full investigation that's already on way, and it's going to deliver very fast the results of this investigation. And they're going to investigate from the source of production all the way to the last person that was delivered the product to them to get the full responsibility and the full story on this. And one thing that he also ended his speech, which was a long speech, and there's so much we can talk about in that speech, but he ended his speech saying that Hezbollah will be delivering a just punishment, And he said that we will not say when or how and what shape it's going to come in, but it will be from where the Zionists cannot even predict. And he said that only the smallest circle within the top cadre of Hezbollah will even know what is the operation, what is, when it's going to happen out, and how it's going to happen. This is a, this is why I said to you, like in the beginning of this answer about this speech, the calmness of its delivery is actually probably the scariest thing that the Israelis can read into this speech.
Yeah. How about these, yesterday that we talked, you talk about these devices, pagers, right now, what's next? You talk about walkie-talkies, and what else do we have there that are just exploding?
Yeah, so, you know, there was a lot of rumors around that iPhones are exploding or other electronics, like the fingerprint machines that on the doors of buildings for offices, you know, check in and so forth. But that was all rumors. Those were devices near a pager or a walkie-talkie that explodes. So the vast majority of devices that were that exploded are these. And there was a few lithium batteries, home UPS kind of devices that are hooked up to solar panels on top of buildings that have a radio wave between the two devices, and that a few of them exploded. So what we can conclude from this is that the main infiltration capability of the Israelis into the system, because all of these devices are based on radio wave, not on cell or internet, is directed through a radio wave. A radio wave is directed into a certain area, and a command is given to whatever devices have lithium batteries in them to overheat them as fast as possible so they can explode. And that's the main thing. And, you know, there has been multiple tracking of American and British you know, intelligence planes that have capabilities that have been flying over Lebanon over the last 2 days, and those are suspect to be the location where these radio waves were directed from, onto the Bekaa Valley, the south of Lebanon, and the Dahiyeh specifically for these devices to explode.
Yeah. And how about the casualties so far?
Yeah, the casualties. Yeah, the casualties, we have, as I said, 22 people the second day, which was more than the first day number of martyred. And that is because walkie-talkies are much bigger devices, and they're, you know, they have a bigger battery to explode. And the Japanese company that the majority of the walkie-talkies that exploded were from is now conducting an investigation, and the Japanese kind of internal security services and the Japanese government are all like conducting an investigation on how, where and how, and how did their device, their broadcasting devices that these walkie-talkies were communicating with, were the ones that gave order for these devices to explode. This is the, you know, the technical chain of how the explosion would be triggered. So, and again, the walkie-talkies, somebody would be in a car, he'd put it on top of the sun visor, just on top of their head as they're driving, and the explosions would be on the head. So this is why the more people were martyred in the situation of a walkie-talkie than a pager. All of the, last night here in my neighborhood, I was sitting on my balcony and I heard a huge explosion, right? And this, I thought it, maybe I'm misheard a sonic boom, but I heard it's not a sonic boom. This morning I found out that the Lebanese military has been with the American University of Beirut and the American University of Beirut Medical Center, looking through all of their devices and any device that had you know, the same brands and so on, and they blew them up all together just in the one of the parking lots of the American University in Beirut. So, and it was a huge explosion. So that tells you how much damage this was intended and where it was directed. The majority of those who use walkie-talkies and pagers are in the medical services, in university security systems, in institutional security systems, and so forth. So it was actually even more targeted beyond on Hezbollah. It was also targeted at the backbone of the society, right? These are institutions that keep a society together, and it was intended to terrorize the nation. And the response of Hezbollah and the response that the Lebanese people are expecting, especially with the speech of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, will definitely be in very clear symmetry to this.
And the question is, what was the reason? Because if they were just spying on these people because they have some sort of access to these devices, why would you do that to these devices? And right now, with this action on their part, do you think in Lebanon, in Hezbollah, how do they perceive it? Do they think that they want to intimidate them? How they want to humiliate them? How, what was the reason, in your opinion?
Yeah, you see, like, the Zionists have lost the propaganda war globally, not only in you know, shaming themselves by looking like monsters that are genociding children and unarmed civilians in Gaza and the West Bank, but also they were humiliated publicly with the amazing warrior acts on of those who are in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Lebanon, in Yemen. The warriors of the Axis of Resistance have humiliated all Western manhood, not only imperialism, okay? And this, you know, the Zionists, how they exist, like any other supremacist group, they tell their members that they are above others. They are, you know, better than Arabs. They are the smartest, the funniest, the strongest, the most unique in as a nation, that their suffering is uncomparable to any other human being's suffering, because we are not human beings anyways. So here, at the core of the identity of the Zionists, and that keeps some garbage from New York or from London to go to Palestine to colonize the land and steal it from its people and kill it's that feeling that they have that ability to do so because they are above. Now that has been destroyed, demolished. Not only they look like they're monsters, but they also look like weaklings, stupid, unable to come up with any strategic or tactical decision making and thinking and planning. And or you know, they're all this money and weapons that they have from the West, they don't know how to use it, and they're failing in using it. They're actually humiliating the whole West's prowess, you know, scientific prowess even. Okay, so this action, the intent of it, the first target actually is the audience inside the Zionist colony. The Zionist propagandists across the world that were demoralized, right? And the Zionists in New York and Toronto and so on that want to brag, right? And the Zionists in the streets of London that are angry that the vast majority of British people are demonstrating on a weekly basis for Palestine, you see? So that was the first intention, and they succeeded in that. And it has to be given to the Zionists. They succeeded in remoralizing, for a minute. Because after that minute, the second day after, actually right now, today, the Zionist media in the Israeli colony are freaking out. They said, and this is the pro-government media outlets. They're saying that, yes, this may have been the smartest, most sophisticated attack we've seen in modern history, but it was for a stupid reason. And the results of it, because it was a stupid decision-making, are going to harm and, backfire on the Zionists. And so the only thing that we can think, why did they do this, the leadership of Netanyahu, is because they are unable to strategically think and come up with correct tactical maneuvers.
It seems that they're sending their weapons to the northern part of Israel right now. And Netanyahu was just, after we talked yesterday, he put out a video in which he was talking about convincing these people, go to there, you're going to be safe, we're going to protect you. And with what has happened, is there any sort of chance that Hezbollah led them to get to their homes?
It's amazing that you brought up this question, because Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah actually spoke directly in his speech to the Israelis, to Netanyahu and the Minister of Defense and all of the cabinet. He said, I'm addressing you about specifically this issue. Because Netanyahu is promising that he's going to bring back. Now the cabinet added to the goals of their war. They have three goals for Gaza: destroy Hamas and blah, blah, blah. And now they officially put a fourth goal, which is to return their colonists to the north of Palestine. So he said, number one, this will never happen. Until there is a stop to the genocide in Palestine, not only those Zionist colonists that left in the north are going to be away, there's going to be more, double and triple those as the war goes on and the battlefield grows. He also threatened, he said, because the Zionists are threatening, also one of their ministers is claiming that they need to create a buffer zone in Lebanon. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said, please come. You know, up until now, Hezbollah is fighting all these Zionist military hidden in fortifications that are very strong underground. Yes, Hezbollah is destroying everything on top of the ground, but there's like bunkers under there, and is spending so much time doing a surveillance to catch every little tank or car or soldier as they walk in between one building to another before they hit them. And by the way, today Hezbollah hit a Merkava tank on the border, and eight crew of this tank are, all like charcoal right now. The Israelis admitted at least two dead of those soldiers. And so if Hezbollah is waiting for these soldiers to come out and cross the line, then they can really take them on. And the results will definitely be worse than when the Israelis tried to cross in 2006. And, where we're not able to move 3 kilometers into the territory of Lebanon for a month and a half. 33 days. So it's impossible. He said the only way that the settlers, the colonists, can come back is the end of the genocide. And he said, come, please, come, let's fight.
And but do they feel that the Israelis really want to fight a big fight, a turn of a fight, this type of fight, that they're gonna just have a full out war? Is that gonna be this way?
I mean, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said until now, their assessment is the Israelis have been saying they are going to invade Lebanon every month since the beginning of the genocide, 11 months now. Every month there was a statement that they're going to invade. But the true factor, if we look, is there's not much really movement to the north. There's propaganda being popped of moving one tank or here or there. They make it look like as if it's they're moving their whole battalions to the north. But the true matter is like one third of the Israeli military has been stationed on the border with Lebanon for 11 months now. They were not, although the Israelis are having a shortage of soldiers on the battlefield in Gaza, they are unable to move one third of their military from the border of Lebanon. These are, you know, kind of stuck in a quicksand situation, or, you know, like they're not able to leave. The shortage is so severe that the Israelis want to retrain their Navy sailors to become ground troops, army. This is enough to make understand that if the Israelis in a defensive position against Hezbollah need to position one third of their military for 11 months nonstop, imagine in an offensive position. They will have to move their whole army. It's impossible that they can invade Lebanon with one third of their ground forces, and Hezbollah will definitely slaughter them all.
Yeah. The question is right now, it seems that they're doing everything to this war getting started by Hezbollah, not by them. They want to just do these type of terrorist attacks because they want something big coming from Hezbollah. Do they really understand in Lebanon, what is the official take of Hezbollah on this type of activities?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that Netanyahu has been trying to taunt the axis of resistance into a bigger war, right? Because we go back to the failures on propaganda. The world has seen Israel commit genocide. If it attacks another country and tries to commit another genocide, it's going to be the end of it. Okay, so what the only way he can commit genocide is if he forces the hand of Lebanon or Iran or who what have you into a full-out war, and by attacking him, and then he can cry, "Oh, they have attacked us! Holocaust!" Okay, this is how it's going to go. And so right now, there's not much even within the imperialist media. Propaganda machine. It is increasingly hard for them to publish anything in support of Israel without looking like a rag, okay, in the media in the West. And so this is the intent. And he also wants to, Netanyahu specifically, wants to have this war start now. He cannot have it start during or close to the American elections. He needs it, and he can't have it start after. You know why? Because if there's no full-out war and an American president is elected, president has 4 years. Even if they are fanatic Zionists, they have more sway over a viceroy of part of the empire like Netanyahu, okay? But at the end of his term, he has less say on the governors of different parts of the empire, okay, as a president. So he has to start the war now. So whoever wins the war, the elections, is, weighed down by this war and can't back out of it, okay? And I think this is why the axis of resistance is trying to not allow this war to break out. And finally, I think Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said something in his speech that every person that wants to understand the kind of war that we are fighting right now here needs to hear. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah reminded everybody that the war in Palestine is a anti-colonial decolonization war. Wars of decolonization are long, They require huge sacrifices. And the main method of the colonized people to win a war against their over superior, and he said they are more advanced. The whole West is behind them. All of the technical power of the West is behind them, and its weapons and money. The only way a decolonial struggle succeeds is actually by not letting your enemy win. All you have to do is drag this on, and every maneuver, tactical plan, scheme that your enemy has, you just have to defeat those. You don't have to be the one winning. You just have to defeat them. Okay? You have to, and this is how decolonization wars like Algeria and Vietnam and South Africa and even now in Palestine will go. And this war is not a short one, and it's against the biggest empire that history have known, the most strongest empire. Not, it's not about against Israel. It's against the whole West that is governed from the imperial capital of Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Before wrapping up this session, what are the countries that are supporting Hezbollah, that are supporting Lebanon, Lebanese people right now, giving them medical support?
Well, Syria opened the hospitals in Damascus for all the victims in the Biqa' Valley. The Biqa' Valley and parts of the south of Lebanon are much closer to Damascus than, you know, to Beirut. So that's immediately, within minutes of the first explosions, immediately the Minister of Health of Syria opened the hospitals for that, and many of the injured were transported. Iraq sent for 2 days in a row planes with doctors, nurses, medical equipment, and specifically the eye surgery equipment. This is where the only shortage that Lebanon is having right now is with specifically dealing with eye injuries, because somebody picked up the pager or to look at it and it exploded in their face. And, you know, although Lebanon has these machines, there's not enough of them to deal with hundreds of injuries like that. Therefore, Iraq sent some machines, and there's more people, you know, with severe injuries in their eyes are being flown into Iran and Syria. So the region here is the axis of resistance, to be truthful about it, right? It's the axis of resistance. This is our battle. We shouldn't expect anything from anywhere else. This is what liberation and sovereignty means. And, although it's a sad, really sad situation, this was a unprecedented on global scale. And I think we are definitely in a new age. And this age is everybody should prepare themselves for the unexpected things. There's nothing that is a limit, and everything's going to be a surprise. And people are going to keep on getting shock after shock. We've been in shock now for 11 months. Since the beginning of this genocide, we have never imagined these things being broadcasted to the global consciousness. In fact, the Israelis at this point may be able to build gas chambers and ovens and live stream them, and nobody will do anything in the West or the rest of humanity, probably, other than the axis of resistance. And this is why we will... we will persevere. Our resistance will not be defeated, and it's now sufficient enough to defeat this empire and its lapdog here, the Zionist colony.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Leith, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Thank you, Nima. See you soon.
See you soon. Bye.